Welcome to another podcast by Air Insight.
This is Addison Schoenland, and today is August the 30th, 2018. And my guest today is an international award-winning aviation journalist, Catherine Creedy, who has been doing this gig since 1980. And Catherine, for the past 5 years, you've been focusing on pilot and workforce issues. So what I would like to talk to you about with today is this pilot shortage. What are the two sides of the argument?
Well, the two sides are very simple. Unions would say that it's not a pilot shortage, but it's a pay shortage. But that hasn't been true for at least 3 or 4 years. And the other side is the fact that this is a global shortage. Everybody is feeling it. Emirates recently grounded planes because it didn't have enough crews to staff them. Regionals in the U.S. have been doing that for years. And, of course, the problem is that the pipeline has been broken since 2013 when the new rule requiring the ATP license became effective, and it required many more hours of time before a pilot could qualify for the right seat of a commercial aircraft. So that's the main problem. The problem arose when the 1,500-hour metric was imposed, and much to the chagrin and opposition of the National Transportation Safety Board and aviation experts around the world, as then member and head of the National Transportation Safety Board, Deborah Herzman, said, hours are a very poor metric of establishing pilot quality, and because airlines, you know, pilots with 20,000 hours have had accidents. But unions have consistently opposed, with the help of people on Capitol Hill like Chuck Schumer, any reduction in those hours. Meanwhile, around the world, pilot training officials and safety experts have completely rejected the hourly metric in favor of a relatively new training regime called competency-based or experience-based training, which basically sets a standard that says you have to, with evidence, you have to show that you're competent as a skill rather than just passing a student along by rote. The other problem in the United States is that we insist on the lockstep method, which takes too long, private, multi-engine, instrument, sport, recreation, commercial, and then finally the ATP. And we have that has created a bottleneck because we have a shortage of certified flight instructor. Instructors. We have a shortage of designated pilot examiners. We have a really crippling shortage of simulators and sim time, which increases the training time by months and the qualification time by months. Each one of these barriers increases the time to get into that cockpit by months. So it's
interesting what you're explaining here, because I spoke to an airline CEO, and he said the following things to me. He runs a regional, and he said what drives him crazy is that his captains are training foreign students to fly, and obviously his captains are flying regional jets. Mm-hmm. And he says 6 months after the young person graduates as a pilot, they are flying 330s into the States.
Correct.
And he says that his pilots can't do this, but their students can. He said that's
right.
A crazy system. I'm not going to say who this person is, but I think you know who,
right.
you know where it would come from.
I think I know who it is, but I believe that what has happened in the United States is really going to be critical for pilots. this pilot shortage in the United States really has backfired on the pilot career.
On the union.
And on the union. And we saw that with a recent publication from Cowan and Company that the growth rate for the major carriers, the big four, American, Delta, United, and Southwest, at just 1% is going to need 44,000 pilots for to replace retirement and to grow, just 1%. That's not a very big growth percentage when airlines have been tagging the growth rate at about 3%. So they're basically stymieing growth. And what this is driving up is, first of all, it's driving up utilization rates, which means not that many more pilot positions. It's driving up the increase in the gauge of aircraft, again, limiting the number of pilot positions, the growth of, in the number of pilot positions. And it's also it's limiting their opportunities. But more critically for pilots is it is very likely that this is providing the urgency needed to get us to automation faster.
Now, that's a radical thing to say, right?
A very radical thing to say. But I think that Airbus and Boeing have both identified this as one of the reasons that they are working toward automation. Airbus has laid out a beautiful single pilot scenario that just is so wonderful that you wonder why nobody thought of it 20 years ago. And so I think that the automation is coming. And it is inevitable because of this global pilot shortage, so that pilots now have to start thinking about in terms of this, the people who are training up now may be the last generation of airline pilots. And that's very serious to the
career. That's a shocking thing to hear.
That is a shocking thing to hear, but you cannot, and everybody is, we're not there yet technologically, and we see that on the ground right now. We are so far away from autonomous vehicles on the ground that it will take a decade for that to be proven, I think. It might be proven in half a decade, but I think to be proven in the minds of the public, it will take a decade.
So I think does automation come to the freight market first?
Yes, it absolutely comes to the freight market first. And Airbus and Boeing are and FedEx and the freighters are already dabbling with the single pilot. And, you know, the unions have protested against this little thing, this little provision in the FAA reauthorization that would have NASA study single pilot operations. But the studies have already been done by Boeing and Airbus, and they're continuing to this day. And Airbus at the last World Airline Training Summit said that it will take a redesign of the aircraft and redesign of the training program. So that's another, that will take probably a decade. But we're looking at 30 to 50 years out when we will see I absolutely believe we will see the end of the pilot career. As disastrous as that is and as sad as I think that is. Now, two things. Pilots are arguing consistently about you need the human in the cockpit. How could we have saved the miracle on the Hudson? How could we have saved the Southwest aircraft with the engine failure without those humans in the cockpit? But proponents argue equally fervently on behalf of the fact that most accidents are caused with by pilot error. So if you take the pilot out of the equation, ... Now, I'm
right.
Very uncomfortable with that. I think that there's too much emphasis on automation. We don't know what risk will be imposed by total automation, but we do know that automation is a problem in safety today. And many accidents have occurred because pilots have relied too much on automation, and we haven't done the training necessary to make sure that they can both monitor automation, but when something goes wrong, they can fly by the seat of their pants. And that's only been in the last 5 years that we have gone in that training regime.
I'm thinking about, remember the Asiana 777 at San Francisco?
Yes.
Three senior pilots, clear day, they didn't know how to fly the plane without the automation. Had the plane been fully automated, everything would have been fine.
Exactly.
But they hand flew the plane in, and guess what?
And they didn't have good cockpit resource management. So that's the other problem with that.
Right. So as you know, the arguments for pilots and for automation all are going to have data points that people will point to say, but look at this, but look at that.
Okay, look at Air France 447. Another perfect example. And really, these are the reasons we have changed our training regime to cover upset UPRT and make sure that they not only know how to avoid a stall, but once they get in the stall, they know how to exit it. And that was a problem in several accidents. So we've got the training in place now to respond to problems with automation and problems with pilots. So we have that. So we have the problem solved as far as that's concerned. We still need to redesign training for total automation.
Well, if we look at drones, how the Air Force is using drones, where the pilot sits in Las Vegas in a container, air-conditioned container, the aircraft is over Afghanistan. So there is clearly automation technology that enables a pilot, so to speak, to be remote from the airplane. Why not have, for example, an airline might have a number of pilots flying different airplanes across different markets or different routes sitting in one place? You just basically become a system manager.
Right. Well, that's exactly the scenario Airbus lays out for single pilot operations. It could have monitoring pilots on the ground, just like an air traffic controller does today, monitoring several flights. But if an incident occurs in the air and the pilot workload spikes, then just like with controllers, that pilot could be sequestered to focus only on that single flight while other pilots take over his responsibilities with the non-emergency aircraft. So that technology exists. The technology is with us today. What it hasn't been proven to the satisfaction of consumers is it hasn't been proven on the ground. But once it is, consumers will not think twice about getting on an aircraft, unstaffed aircraft.
So a couple of things that cross my mind. How much did Airbus guess, or does Airbus estimate, this would save the industry?
For single pilot operations, it estimates a $60 billion in savings. And that was as of April or May of this year when Airbus spoke at the World Airline Training Summit. But before that, last August, UBS Securities came out and said removing pilots from the cockpit would save $30 billion. Most of which would be in workforce costs, but the rest would be in saving on training and higher efficiency in operations.
So when these are breathtaking numbers. Firstly, if one thinks about injecting between 30, let's take the low number, 30 billion into the global airline cash flow, that would be like staggering what the impact would be. Second of all, I'm thinking about what's going on in Europe this season, the summer, with, take example, Ryanair, and of course the impact of that on tens of thousands of people when pilots decide to go on strike at the drop of a hat. Technology doesn't go on strike. Technology doesn't get sick.
Now let's look at how the industry has responded to the shortage. It has pulled out all the stops. We are now, and successfully, we are now at the highest point of interest in becoming a career pilot, an airline pilot, probably in history, probably since World War II, and we're expanding beyond that. But again, so that's great. That's wonderful. We've got aviation programs being created for high schools and middle schools, thanks to the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. We've got all sorts of things in place to get people interested in the aviation career. But we have these barriers to completion. First of all, the financial barrier. It's $150,000. And the number one reasons for pilots, would-be pilots, for dropping out is cost. Okay, then we have the process barriers of not enough flight instructors, which lost my nephew his career because his college lost CFIs to the airlines in his junior and senior year. So he went into another profession, airport management. So that's number two. So then we, number three, we have months-long waits for designated pilot examiners, which is being addressed by workforce issues in Congress, part of the reauthorization. And then we have not enough sims. And the simulator companies tell me they don't want to admit that they're stacked up over Cleveland on sim time, because then people will call their competitors. Well, the competitors are in the same position. So this is a perfect storm to not only, yeah, we have all these people clamoring for admission into colleges to become pilots, but we have all these barriers to getting to the finish line. And on top of that, you mentioned this from that regional airline captain. When I did my Forbes Online series about what needs to be done and why we were at this pilot shortage, half of all positions at flight schools and in universities were taken up by foreign pilots being paid by their governments or their airlines in order to take flight training in the United States. So when they graduated, they flitted off with an FAA pilot's license to their home markets and became wide-body pilots, narrow-body pilots, regional pilots. They were flying the line. Meanwhile, the other half of the graduates went to drilling holes in the sky for, you know, flying banners over the beach, flying traffic reporters, flying weather reports, flying pipeline inspection, which does not give them the experience they need to actually become an airline pilot. And the reason I say that is that regional airlines were finding that they have to retrain these guys to get them to the discipline and the professionalism that they had when they graduated from their flight schools. Unlearn the bad habits. And I have to tell you that I do a little public relations for the Regional Air Cargo Carriers Association. And the reason I'm so hot and bothered about this issue alone is that if those pilots, instead of drilling holes in the skies, which gave them bad habits, went to the regional cargo carriers, they could gain the experience they needed to be airline pilots faster, more professional, more disciplined, and it would be a win-win for everybody. And indeed, those pilots are being sought after by both the cargo and the airline industry. So it would be completely applicable experience without losing the discipline and the professionalism that, by the way, National Transportation Safety Board says is the single most important metric in the creation of a pilot.
Wow. Catherine, it's like you said at the beginning of the call, the system was broken. Thank you so much for sharing these ideas.
You're very welcome, Addison.
This recording is copyrighted by Air Insight.